Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Cancer Network's Gino Morrow spoke with Dr. Nader Sunay from the Ivy Brain Tumor Center about ongoing research efforts in the glioblastoma field. Specifically, he discussed the Phase 3 GlioFocus trial, which will compare treatment with niraparib versus temozolomide in patients with newly diagnosed MGMT unmethylated disease. Through the GlioFocus trial, Sunay and co-investigators aim to provide clinically meaningful improvements in overall survival and quality of life across this patient population.
Glioblastoma, as we know, it's been a very difficult to treat cancer, but it fortunately is not short on research. Could you talk a little bit on the current state of the field and any current challenges that perhaps you're working to solve?
Yeah, you said it exactly. It is a very difficult cancer. It's considered to be one of, if not the most lethal cancer in humans. This has been the case for decades. Glioblastoma itself is the most common primary malignant brain tumor. It happens at various stages of life. There are no known socioeconomic, ethnic, environmental precipitants of it for the vast, vast majority of patients. So it's a spontaneous cancer that often happens to patients when they're very healthy and have otherwise no other medical issues. Patients typically present with something acute, sudden onset, severe headache, seizures, focal weakness, things that are thought to be stroke-like symptoms at first. And then when they are scanned and we see lesion, they typically go through three or four modalities of treatment in succession, sometimes simultaneously. It always begins with surgery, and one of the most effective modalities for treatment today, as it was 30, 40 years ago, is just simply getting as much of the tumor out as safely as possible. But these tumors cannot be surgically cured, and so these patients go on to the one drug that has clear survival benefit associated with it, which is temozolomide. It's an alkylating agent. It was approved in the early 2000s, and that was the last time we had a drug approval with a real survival benefit, so it's been quite some time. And they typically get temozolomide in conjunction with fractionated radiotherapy, which means 6 weeks of daily radiotherapy. And then sometimes there's a fourth modality called tumor treating fields, which is an electromagnetic cap that some patients can wear that may have some survival benefit associated with it. So most patients go through all of this. It is not easy. It comes at risk. It's extremely disruptive, and it comes at the expense of neurological morbidity. And then for almost all patients, there's a tumor recurrence that happens within months, and they typically enter another cycle of these types of modalities. The median survival today is approximately 16 months for all comers. This isn't too different than it was 20 years ago. There are some prognostic biomarkers that separate some patients from others, but it's all relative. The most important one is called MGMT methylation, which is a biomarker in the tumor that indicates sensitivity to DNA damaging agents like temozolomide. So 60% of these patients are what are called unmethylated and therefore have little to no sensitivity to temozolomide. So effectively for those patients, there is no medical therapy with a survival benefit. And then 40% have some sensitivity, but certainly not sufficient for cure.
Thank you so much for that background. A lot of good information to include here. Let's turn our focus to the GlioFocus study. So obviously this is a very exciting phase 3 trial. Can you talk about maybe some of the prior data or evidence that we have that suggests that PARP inhibition could be effective in these patients with glioblastoma?
Sure. So as you mentioned, the GlioFocus trial is an international randomized phase 3 study looking to compare the PARP inhibitor niraparib from GSK compared to temozolomide in the newly diagnosed MGMT unmethylated glioblastoma population of adults. So as I mentioned, these are the patients that have no known sensitivity to temozolomide and therefore probably the largest unmet need amongst the sea of unmet needs in the glioblastoma population. The PARP inhibitor itself is available for other cancers because it works through a separate mechanism called synthetic lethality. And for that, with, for example, tumors with BRCA mutations, which glioblastomas rarely have, but for example, ovarian cancer has, you can see a pretty significant clinical response. We are really looking at this drug through a different mechanism, which is really radiosensitization. So it's the combination of the PARP inhibitor with radiation, which is thought to be clinically effective. The data for that, for this study, is interesting in that it was arrived at through a pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic-driven approach, meaning that for a lot of drug development in brain cancer, we go through a typical phase 1-2 run-up with some evidence of potential clinical efficacy in a phase 2 that then leads to adequate confidence to go into a randomized study, a phase 2 or 3. However, that approach has not served our field very well in the sense that we typically have a difficult time identifying agents in the preclinical stage with a high degree of predictivity of how they will perform in the clinical stage. And then in the early clinical stages of clinical trials, there's a lot of patient heterogeneity. And so as a consequence, it's very easy to have a phase 1-2 study with some small subset of patients that do very well. And an assumption is made oftentimes that that is because of the drug. But in fact, in an uncontrolled setting, it's just because there's patient heterogeneity with respect to the tumor biology. The kind of point, the proof of concept studies in support of the niraparib GlioFocus trial focused on identifying biological evidence of drug effect paired with clinical evidence. And so these are these hybrid, what are called phase zero hybrid studies that are performed. This particular study was performed at our center at the Ivy Brain Tumor Center in Phoenix, and basically took patients with newly diagnosed glioblastoma patients that were unmethylated, provided them with 2 or 3 days of niraparib pre-surgically before they had any treatment. Then at the time of the operation, when tumor is resected, looked at different compartments of the tumor and asked the questions, to what extent is this drug penetrating the outer reaches of the tumor? To what extent is it modulating its target? And then for those patients that did have a positive response in these PK/PD profiles, which for this drug turned out to be all the patients because of the positive effects of the drug, they then went on to get the drug combined with radiotherapy. So we knew that those patients that are getting the drug in a therapeutic form really had reason to have a clinical response. And that gave us a little bit more confidence in interpreting that clinical data. And when that data was read out at the last ASCO meeting, you know, it was considerably better than what we had seen in the historical data and median survival approached 20 months, which was far in excess of what we'd seen historically for unmethylated GBM.
So now the phase 3 study we know is comparing what is the standard therapy of temozolomide. And you talked about this a little bit already, but can you talk about how temozolomide has performed historically in these patients? So how much more are we looking to hopefully see this more effective for these patients?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. Is obviously the field is starving for progress, but patients and providers don't just want any kind of progress. They're looking for something that's clinically meaningful, meaningful from a quality of life perspective, not just a statistical advantage of marginal value. So if you look at the large data sets for unmethylated glioblastoma patients getting standard of care, which we call the STOOP protocol, which as I mentioned, is surgery followed by temozolomide plus radiation concomitantly, those patients have a median overall survival of about 12 months, so far lower than the average for all glioblastoma patients together, which is closer to 16. What we're really looking to do with this trial is set a benchmark that's clinically relevant for patients and providers. So the overall survival target for the study is 18 months, which is to effectively convert that 12-month natural history to a natural history closer to the methylated glioblastoma population. We think that that is a very meaningful transformation of a very difficult patient population, a significant chunk of survival time that would be beneficial to patients and providers and caregivers, and importantly, an advantage for quality of life, which is of paramount importance for this patient population.
Thank you. And if I was reading the study correctly also, so patients are receiving niraparib both during and after radiation. Is that correct?
That's right. In all settings, patients get some form of adjuvant therapy after radiation. For the Stupp protocol, they get several months of temozolomide. And for this niraparib protocol, they continue to get niraparib. And the logic that in both cases is that the tumor continues to evolve and push ahead. The tumor continues to be susceptible to its own DNA damage as a consequence of its own internal failings, and then therefore susceptible to externally induced DNA damage, which both drugs effectively do.
And because niraparib has been available for other indications, especially in ovarian cancer, are we aware or are we already seeing any kind of like safety toxicities associated with the drug? And have we already figured out kind of how to mitigate those?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, the safety profile of the drug is well understood because there's been such a population of patients getting not only niraparib, but other PARP inhibitors in that class. And so this is where a pharmacokinetic-driven clinical trial can really help tune drug dosing, because we knew going into the proof of concept phase 0-2 that we were going to face thrombocytopenia, which is what all these patients face, and which is a particular issue for glioblastoma patients at times. What we learned very quickly is that this drug has such exceptional CNS penetration, better than any drug we'd seen in this class, that you can dial the dose down considerably below the maximally tolerated dose, still get what looks to be an equivalent pharmacodynamic effect, and sidestep some of these issues of thrombocytopenia. So the drug dosing in the clinical trial is deliberately on the safer side, and the de-escalation rules are deliberately aggressive so that patients can avoid this thrombocytopenia risk, which is always a concern in patients that have had brain surgery, of course.
So if this trial is hopefully comes out positive, how do you envision niraparib really having an impact on clinical practice?
Right. So the trial readout will be in a couple years, and the trial overall is 450 patients. It's across 11 countries, and is really designed to be a new or to interrogate a new standard of care for MGMT unmethylated glioblastoma patients. So if the study hits its endpoint, then what we're looking at are two parallel standards of care. For methylated glioblastoma patients, it would remain as temozolomide plus radiation after maximal extended resection surgery. And for unmethylated glioblastoma patients, it would be surgery followed by a combination of niraparib plus radiotherapy, followed by niraparib maintenance. And then we would have to explore other scenarios like the combination of the two drugs together in the methylated population and other sort of sequelae.
That's interesting. That leads easily into my next question is, are there any other agents or regimens that you're either working on right now or you're excited about that are also hoping to propel this field forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's room for optimism in all this. This is a difficult disease, and obviously the introductory lines around it are very grim. But we're in a new era of oncology care. We've seen incredible advances outside of CNS oncology. And a lot of that, I think, will drip into CNS oncology and neuro-oncology. The Ivy Center, where we're at in Phoenix, as I mentioned, is really designed to identify at an early stage promising as well as unpromising drugs so we can better prioritize drug development in this space. At any given moment, we typically pursue somewhere around a dozen new drugs in clinical development and a dozen new drugs in preclinical development. And we're always looking to see where we can explore and identify things that merit accelerated development, like was the case with niraparib. And we do it in a way where we're really pursuing all of this independent of company influence because we fund our own studies. And so it lets us take a pretty agnostic view of the field. We're very excited about what we're seeing in other dimensions of oncology that could have applicability within neuro-oncology. Drug classes like antibody-drug conjugates, molecular glues, CO-TACs, siRNA, these are classes where in some cases have never really been interrogated within the neuro-oncology space, but merit that. Obviously, the immunotherapy revolution so far has not touched neuro-oncology and glioblastoma patients as it has in other types of cancers. But that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be crossover with other strategies. Another area that I think continues to merit interest are sort of small molecular inhibitors, particularly in the setting of germline mutations in gliomas, as well as oncogenic fusions. And there's been some success in that latter space recently in the setting of TRK mutations. So we think that there are actually a number of upcoming, promising early development strategies that we're exploring, and hopefully other programs will as well. And we think that the key to identifying what is truly promising versus not is less about a narrative-driven approach and more about really looking for tissue-based evidence in patient tumors themselves so that we can stop relying too much on surrogate models and model systems.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And we have the SNO meeting coming up towards the end of November. I know it's a little bit early still, but is there anything that you know might be discussed at that meeting this year that you're excited about?
Well, we don't expect any major readout to this SNO meeting, but that's not uncommon. I think that what we're hoping to see are some early term readouts on some studies that have been kind of brewing over the last 12 to 18 months. You know, for whatever reason, the drug development world has started to proliferate a variety of DNA damage response or DDR targeting agents. The PARP inhibitor class was one of the earliest, but since then, there have been other classes emerging, ATM inhibitors, ATR, DNA PK, et cetera. And those have started to gain some traction. The ATM inhibitor strategy, for example, is something where we saw some early readouts at AACR by our group and others. And we think that SNO is where you're going to start to see some clinical data in the upfront setting for glioblastoma for ATM inhibitors such as AZD1390, which is from AstraZeneca, and others. This is an important space because even though radiotherapy is one of the oldest modalities for treatment for glioblastoma, it's still today, outside of surgery, the most effective modality for treatment. And worldwide, it's the most ubiquitously available modality for treatment. So having agents that can accentuate and accelerate the effects of that modality, I think could have broad advantage.
Thank you. And just one final question. So for any either patient or physician that is looking to get their patient enrolled on GlioFocus, is there anything that you'd like to tell them?
Well, the GlioFocus study in the United States will be in at least 30 sites and worldwide in another 90 or so minimum. So hopefully it will be available at your center or at a center near you. The best way to get information on that at this point is to go to the Ivy Brain Tumor Center website, which is www.ivybraintumorcenter.org, and look for the GlioFocus landing page. As sites come online, we'll continue to keep that updated. As you mentioned, the study is open and accruing, and that happened in late June. So we're expecting a real wave of activations in the coming months, and hopefully this will be a new option for patients in the near future.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.